It's Monday, February 3rd. I'm Jane Coaston, and this is What A Day, the show where February is Black History Month, because it is. And today, we're thinking about the men and women who served in segregated units during the First and Second World Wars. People like Sergeant Henry Johnson, or my grandfather, Oscar Coaston, who fought on D-Day as part of the 320th Balloon Barrage Battalion. On today's show, the Trump administration continues to fire federal workers across agencies. And President Donald Trump flings us into a trade fiasco with our neighboring allies. But let's start with the Trump administration's war on transgender Americans. Since Inauguration Day, President Donald Trump has decided that one of America's biggest problems isn't high prices or lack of access to healthcare. No, it's trans people doing stuff, from being kids to serving our country. That's the only way I can explain the Trump administration going after transgender folks at every stage of life. One executive order was aimed at discouraging schools and teachers from supporting transgender youth.
My Department of Education will inform states and school districts that if any teacher or school official suggests to a child that they could be trapped in the wrong body, they will be faced with severe consequences, including potential civil rights violations for sex discrimination and the elimination of federal funding.
Another executive order he signed declaring that there are only two genders. Apparently, this was so important that Trump also made sure to mention it in his inauguration speech.
As of today, it will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
And then there's Trump's efforts to push transgender people out of the military. He signed an executive order on January 27th that orders the Pentagon to figure out a policy for trans members within 30 days.
To ensure that we have the most lethal fighting force in the world, we will get transgender ideology the hell out of our military. It's going to be gone.
This puts everything in the hands of our new Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. And given that part of the executive order reads that being trans, quote, conflicts with the soldier's commitment to an honorable, truthful, and disciplined lifestyle, even in one's personal life, I'm not feeling good about what that means for trans members of the military. LGBTQ plus rights groups sued the White House the day after the ban was announced. GLAAD and the National Center for Lesbian Rights filed a joint lawsuit on behalf of six active trans service members and two trans people who want to enlist. They're arguing that the ban is unconstitutional. Lambda Legal and the Human Rights Campaign also announced plans to sue. The U.S. military is the biggest employer of transgender people in America. Thousands of trans people are serving as we speak, and now their careers are in real peril. This isn't the first time Trump has attempted to remove trans people from military service. He announced a ban on trans service back in 2017. But this ban could mean that not only are trans people not allowed to join the military, but trans people already serving could be forced out. To learn more about the experiences of trans service members and how they're fighting back against Trump, I spoke with Army veteran Layla Ireland. She's a member of Sparta Pride, a group of trans service members and veterans who are dedicated to creating inclusive environments in the U.S. military. Layla, welcome to What A Day.
Aloha, Jane. Thank you for having me.
Before we get into talking about the ban, can you tell me about your time in the Army? Where were you in your transition when you enlisted?
Yeah, you know, I come from a long legacy of service. My father was in the military. My grandfather was in the military. My great-grandfather was in the military as well. After high school, I decided to join the military and enlisted into the Army as a military intelligence human collector or interrogator, rather. And I immediately deployed to Iraq. And this was a couple years after the war had just started in Iraq. But the reason why I joined the military was because there was a sense of greater need to be a part of something bigger than myself. I think during that time frame after 9/11, I think there was a lot of folks that felt compelled to be a part of that.
I remember.
Yeah.
When you enlisted, had you begun to transition? Had that been something that you'd been thinking about? Were you able to talk to anyone about being trans, or is that something that you kind of kept on the down low?
You know, that's quite interesting because at the time I enlisted during when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was being implemented. And I remember on my enlistment papers that asked, there was a question that asked if I identified as homosexual or if I engaged in any homosexual activity. That's like that line right there haunts my mind. Having to live and operate under a don't ask, don't tell policy was really hard. But at the time, I did not have the vocabulary nor the resources to understand what I was going through. So the easiest mm-hmm. thing was to identify as a gay male. When the don't ask, don't tell repeal happened, I was stationed in San Antonio and we went down to, they called it the Strip. It's just all gay bars. And there were so many people that were part of the LGBT community, allies that came out to celebrate this wonderful news. And I remember on that day, I'm watching my friends and some of them were wearing their uniforms in the streets. They were very happy, but I still did not feel a part of that. But after going to therapy, my therapist actually slipped me this post-it note that had the word transgender on it. And she said, go home and do your research. And everything that I researched and read was exactly what I was feeling.
When did you end up deciding to transition? Was it during your service or afterwards?
Actually, it was during my service. So end of 2011, when the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal happened. And then into 2012 is when I actually started my transition. I was not assisted by the military. I was doing this all on the outside on my own funding. I didn't inform the military that I was doing it because I knew at that time, just like Don't Ask, Don't Tell was being implemented, mm-hmm. that started this journey in advocacy and activism within and outside of the military for trans people in the military.
Take us back to 2017 when Trump announced the first ban on transgender troops in a series of tweets, of course. How did you feel hearing that the president created a ban directly impacting you and other people like you and your service? What did you do?
One, it was extremely discouraging. You know, coming from the commander-in-chief of the United States, it was supposed to be focused on readiness and cost concerns, despite no evidence of that. Mm-hmm. Trans people became an easy target to talk about, like, this is the reason why you can't do this. But from that point on, it became our mission. Trans people in the military, it became their mission to prove everyone wrong. And for the last decade, we have done that. Trans people have been serving in the military for centuries. Albert Cashier is a woman who pretended to be a man just so that they could serve in their military. And when Albert Cashier died, they found out that they were female. And mm-hmm. the troops that served with him in service said, nope, that is a he, that will never be a she. We honor them. We're going to give them the honor and dignity that they deserve because of the contributions they made during the war. And so it's crazy to me that the rhetoric surrounding trans people in the military is that we're unfit, undisciplined, we're mentally ill, and that we are incapable of serving. No data can prove that.
Right. I mean, that's almost a direct quote from the Prioritizing Military Excellence and Readiness executive order that Trump signed on January 27th,
literally,
saying that trans service members are incapable of leading, quote, an honorable, truthful, and disciplined lifestyle, even in one's personal life, which first, what? So what are you hearing from active trans service members in this moment in which the president of the United States, based on bullshit, has just been like, oh, you're terrible even at home, so you can't be in the military? Like, it's bonkers.
Yeah. You know that the pulse in the community right now amongst trans service members is that obviously we're still continuing to do our job. Transgender people have been serving openly and honorably for the last 10 years. And because we were able to bring our authentic selves to the front line of the mission, we were able to complete those missions. We were able to be and do all the things and the efforts that are needed to be a part of this great warfighting team. To say otherwise is obsolete.
Even though we've been here before, mm-hmm. the executive order Trump signed last week doesn't just prevent new enlistments. It opens the door for removing thousands of active duty troops in every branch. What consequences would our military suffer if this happens?
It's devastating if you think about it, because the arguments that are being used to oppose trans service right now today echo the same rhetoric that was used to resist the integration of African Americans in 1948. It was also used for women in combat. in the 1990s. And then it was also, again, used for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So in every case, these predictions of harm were proven wrong. The military emerged stronger. These transgender Americans that serve in uniform embody a dedication that transcends personal grievances. And they stand shoulder to shoulder with their fellow service members to defend freedoms that paradoxically some would deny them. You're really messing with a lot of people if you decide to take them out. And it weakens the effectiveness of our armed forces altogether.
In his first 10 days in office, President Trump has signed actions broadly targeting trans people in what feels like every way possible. And there's been rampant anti-trans legislation at the state level that restricts access to gender-affirming care and censors discussion of gender identity in classrooms. And we're now hearing about how the CDC basically wants to censor the words trans or gender nonconforming. But I'm gaining so much hope from just talking to you and hearing about your experiences and your references to history and thinking about how trans folks have always been here and they will always be here. So where do you find hope as we prepare for 4 years under a president who has clearly and repeatedly promised to embolden these kinds of hateful policies?
I want to say that I pull my hope from the folks that I surround myself with. They lace up their boots every day, they put their uniform on, and they continue the mission until otherwise. Outside of that, we have a large community. And what I'm seeing in the community is that 10 years ago, we could not have this conversation openly. And that gives me hope because the greater society does see what's happening. They understand that this is not right. And they are ready to do what is needed to continue to protect not just trans people, not just the LGBT community, but everyone at large, because it largely affects and impacts everyone in a way that is different from each other. But having the hope to continue to move forward together, that's going to be important if we're going to win this and survive this at all.
Layla, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for your service.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jane.
That was my conversation with Army veteran Layla Ireland. We'll get to more of the news in a moment, but if you like the show, make sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, watch us on YouTube, and share with your friends. More to come after some ads. What a Day is brought to you by Mosh. You know, the older I get, the more I find myself wanting to be really intentional about the way I live, eat, and take care of my body. Mosh was founded by Maria Shriver and her son, Patrick Schwarzenegger, with a simple mission: to create a conversation about brain health through food, education, and research. Mosh joined forces with the world's top scientists and functional nutritionists to go beyond your average protein bar. With 8 delicious flavors, including a plant-based one in peanut butter and chocolate, each Mosh bar is made with ingredients that support brain health, like ashwagandha, lion's mane, collagen, and omega-3s. And now Mosh bars come with a new look and new formulation, featuring a game-changing, brain-boosting ingredient you won't find in any other bar. Mosh is now the first and only food brand boosted with Cognizin, a premium nootropic that supplies the brain with a patented form of citicoline. But here's the best part to make you feel good. Mosh donates a portion of all proceeds from your order to fund gender-based brain health research through the Women's Alzheimer's Movement. Why gender-based? 2/3 of all Alzheimer's patients are women. Mosh is working closely to close the gap between women and men's health research. If you want to find ways to give back to others and fuel your body and your brain, Mosh bars are the perfect choice for you. Head to moshlife.com/wadpod to save 20% off plus free shipping on the bestsellers trial pack. That's 20% off plus free shipping on the bestsellers trial pack at moshlife.com/wadpod. Thanks, Mosh, for sponsoring this episode. Here's what else we're following today.
Headlines.
Tariffs don't cause inflation. They cause success. They cause big success. So we're going to have great success. There could be some temporary short-term disruption, and people will understand that.
During a press conference in the Oval Office Friday, President Trump reminded us that he thinks the word tariff is one of the most beautiful words in the dictionary. And then on Saturday, he signed an order imposing tariffs on imports from Canada, Mexico, and China. As of Sunday night, the penalties are set to go into effect Tuesday. They include tariffs on fruits, vegetables, meat, cars, clothing, lumber, beer, and spirits. So, everything I like and enjoy. Energy imported from Canada, like oil, natural gas, and electricity, would also be taxed. This will likely set the U.S. up for a trade war with some of our closest allies. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau laid out more than $100 billion in retaliatory tariffs. Trudeau had a direct message for Americans on Saturday.
As I have consistently said, tariffs against Canada will put your jobs at risk, potentially shutting down American auto assembly plants and other manufacturing facilities. They will raise costs for you, including food at the grocery stores and gas at the pump. They will impede your access to an affordable supply of vital goods crucial for U.S. security.
Trump posted on Truth Social the tariffs are meant to, quote, protect Americans. He said he imposed them, quote, because of the major threat of illegal aliens and deadly drugs killing our citizens, including fentanyl. For the record, about 1% of illegal fentanyl in the United States comes in through Canada. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum said she'll announce the details of Mexico's plan to defend itself from the U.S. tariffs today. And if we wanted any comfort from the leader of the free world who got us into this mess, we haven't gotten it. Trump screamed at us in all caps on Truth Social Sunday, will there be some pain? Yes, maybe, and maybe not. Two top security officials from the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, were put on administrative leave Saturday. They reportedly refused to give Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency access to personnel files and classified information. USAID's website went dark Saturday, and it's now been 2 weeks since Trump signed the Reevaluating and Realigning United States Foreign Aid Executive Order, which temporarily freezes foreign aid in line with his administration's America First stance. USAID provides billions of dollars around the world for things like field hospitals, refugee camps, HIV treatment, and clearing landmines. Almost 100 staff members have been put on leave from the agency in the last week, and thousands more could be laid off in the coming weeks. Elon Musk spent Sunday tweeting his contempt for USAID, writing, quote, USAID is a criminal organization, and retweeting a claim that USAID funded bioweapons research that resulted in the COVID-19 pandemic. The Department of Justice fired more than a dozen federal prosecutors late Friday who had been working on the January 6th insurrection case, and the Trump administration plans to potentially purge thousands of FBI agents who were involved in the investigation. The firings come after the DOJ deleted a massive online database last week which contained case summaries of the January 6th insurrectionists. The formerly public webpages documented the prosecution of 1,600 defendants who have now been pardoned or had their sentences commuted. But pardoning the insurrectionists and pretending the insurrection itself never happened at all are two different things. The watchdog group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington has called for an investigation into the legality of deleting the records. In a written statement, they said, quote, the DOJ's removal of this database is squarely in line with President Trump's ongoing efforts to rewrite or erase the insurrection and likely violates federal law. At least part of the database is still accessible on the Internet Archive.
We're going to take it back or something very powerful is going to happen.
Sunday night, President Trump reiterated his claims China is running the Panama Canal because he can't help himself. Secretary of State Marco Rubio visited Panama over the weekend to do Trump's bidding. Rubio told Panamanian President José Raúl Mulino that his country must immediately curb Chinese influence over the Panama Canal or face retaliatory action from the U.S. The Trump administration insists China's involvement in the canal violates the U.S. treaty. Mulino says Panama is not in violation of the treaty, but he acknowledged China's role in the ports at either end of the canal. He said the consortium controlling them was being audited, and the canal authority would give Rubio more information about that. And that's the news. One more thing. It's been a weird few weeks, hasn't it? Not weird in a fun way, like, oh my gosh, that movie was so weird. No, this has been weird in the way that getting motion sickness in the back of my mom's minivan when I was 4 and throwing up all over the place was weird. Because it turns out that all of that stuff Trump said he wanted to do, Project 2025, it's happening. The tariffs that some Republicans, like Texas Representative Dan Crenshaw, said were just negotiation tactics.
This is how Trump got the Remain in Mexico policy done in the first place. He threatened a tariff. The tariff never came to be. Look, I don't need to teach anybody economics 101. Tariffs will hurt the American consumer. That's true. But they also make for good negotiation tools, especially when those tariffs will hurt Mexico a lot worse than they'll hurt us.
Yeah. they're happening. So now what? There have been a lot of ways we've talked about how liberals can respond to this moment. And we're going to keep talking about that. But let's start with something small, something you can do right now. When someone says they didn't think Trump would do this, no matter what this is, or they don't support what he's doing, or they even say they regret supporting him, welcome them in. Agree with them. It is extremely fashionable right now to be a political asshole. We see it on the right all the time. How else would I know that I'm a DEI hire at literally any job I've ever had? But let's not lie to ourselves. We've got plenty of it on the left, too. We've all seen the kind of person who talks tough on TikTok about how liberal white women are cringe, or that any Trump supporter who sounds disappointed with his administration is just a stupid moron who is getting what they deserve. Don't be that person. There are people who voted for Trump who also voted to support access to abortion and raise the minimum wage. They trusted Trump when he said he could lower grocery prices. Now, does that make sense to me? Absolutely not. But if that's not a persuadable voter, I don't know what one is. If we want to build a coalition to take this on, we're going to have to build bridges, not blow them up, and congratulate ourselves on how based the explosion was. So yeah, this is all weird and bad and scary. And the only way we're going to beat it is to find allies. And we're not going to agree with them on everything. But then again, I probably don't agree with you on everything. But we agree on what's important. This administration is a danger to everything we love and care about. So let's figure out how to do better and do it together. Before we go, there's a ton of rage bait in the news right now, meant to distract and overwhelm us. But today, we'd like to focus on something positive, the work being done to fight back and what you can do to help. This month, as part of Vote Save America's Anxiety Relief Program, it's supporting Black-led organizations and candidates of color helping us gain ground at the state and local level. Like Janelle Bynum, Oregon's first Black Congress member, who won her district by less than 12,000 votes in 2024 and is in a must-win re-election bid that could determine whether Democrats take back the House. Find out more at VoteSaveAmerica.com. That's all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, make sure you've got all of your steel purchased, and tell your friends to listen. And if you're into reading and not just about how much of our daily lives are powered and improved by coordination between multiple countries, like our Canadian and Mexican neighbors like me, What A Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Jane Costin, and this show is Against Autarky. What A Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Desmond Taylor. Our associate producers are Raven Yamamoto and Emily Four. Our producer is Michelle Eloy. We had production help today from Tyler Hill, Johanna Case, Joseph Dutra, Greg Walters, and Julia Clare. Our senior producer is Erica Morrison, and our executive producer is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.